Okay, Hebrews chapter 12. Let's continue on there. Okay, we read about the patriarchs and how God has set a portion of himself and the calling of each one of these individuals right here as a sign and a token. And the reason why I'm saying that is because as we come up here on this in chapter 12, we'll be reading about the word peace and why is it that the peace of God abides these things. So we should be there in Hebrews chapter 12. Start around verse 6 here and bring it up again. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives. So I like the word chasten. Make sure you have a highlighter there. Okay, we'll be talking about chastening, scourging, cleansing, and purging. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives. Chastening, scourging, cleansing, purging. So make sure you write those down. I'll say it again. Chastening, scourging, cleansing, purging. These are the things which are, of course, connected with the work of regeneration, but is also connected to your stewardship and your priesthood. Okay, without the priesthood of Christ, these things cannot be set forth within you as your circumcision. Because truth circumcises the heart, and God changes your perspective with these things. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives. Now, if you endure chastening, that is to accept this restriction, because God has appointed this time, wherein the presence of death is, to put a cap upon the God code, and also to bring into an alignment your perspective. Now, if you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. Again, it has to do with the pruning. And we talked about that last week in John chapter 15. Okay, as concerning purging. Whom the Lord receives, he cleanses. Now, why don't we turn there just for a second, and that's in John 15, verse 2. Okay, now, every branch in me that bears not fruit, he takes away. And every branch that bears fruit, he purges it, that it may bring forth more fruit. And you can highlight the word purge there, because we're talking about a pruning process for increase. Okay, now we go back to Hebrews. You know, Jesus made this known at the time to his apostles and regarding the gospel which would be preached in representation of him, that there is going to be a nurturing, a cleansing, a circumcision, just like the children of Israel. And when the children of Israel came out of Egypt, they had to have their perspective realigned with that which was of God's perspective. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens. Now let's jump to verse 7 here. If you endure chastening, that is to accept this restriction. Now, to accept this restriction is also to tame the beast, okay, or to tame the imagination. Okay, now, if you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. Okay, now, the word sons right there have to do with as plants of righteousness. Every plant which my heavenly Father has not planted should be plucked up. And remember, Jesus said that? Now, weeds plant themselves, okay, but crops are planted by farmers. Now, God is planting within this dimension his children called the wheat. Now, Jesus also brought forth a parable regarding how Satan sows tares, but God sows wheat. Okay, now let's go back to verse 7 here. Now, if you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons, which has to do with he sets the scenario for your cleansing, just like the priest. Okay, the priest had to follow a certain pattern for cleansing, and we do the same thing. Without the priesthood, there is no cleansing that is forthcoming. Now, you still remain within the garments of the defilement. Okay, so if you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is he whom the Father chastens not? And that, of course, the word chastening again has to do with the assigned tasks. That's another perspective there, to assigning of tasks. Just like when Moses gave Aaron his commandments and responsibilities to the altar and to the tabernacle and to that priesthood for his cleansing. He first had to be cleansed, and then he had an assigned task. Okay, and that's the same thing that we do. The knowledge which we have received is for the purpose of cleansing, as Paul said. Now you're washed. Now you're sanctified. Now you're justified. So there's a certain washing, which is preparatory, and then there's an activity. Okay, this activity is for your consecration. And it's this consecration that you're as holiness to the Lord. Okay, now God separates you from the world to himself. That's called sanctification. Okay, but then you separate yourself from the world, and that's called holiness. Okay, that's called holiness. Now, we separate ourselves from the world, and of course, that's in its most simple form. Okay, and sanctification and holiness, the definition of that is in the simplest form. But there is more to it than that simple definition. Okay, as we see the engagement of that priesthood, of that first covenant, it was more complex as it continued with the responsibilities concerning their washings and concerning the setting of the display bread. Everything that they did in that tabernacle in its first form was rather simple, but the complication of it has to do with all the assigned duties for the Levites, each one in their assigned duty, from the setting of the wood in the altar, okay, which had to be in its proper order, to the bringing up of the sacrifices and the slaughter and the binding of the legs. There's a lot of things that are involved with that, very involving. Okay, it's the same thing with when you're hired for a particular job. You're being hired for a particular job, and it sounds real easy, but we know there's complications or there's things that are more involved with it, okay, mostly as you grow into your understanding of it. And it's the same thing with your priesthood. It's simple, okay, yet it's complex. I mean, involving your prayer life, your study of doctrine, and your attendance of the assembly and the attendance of the altar. Now, for whom the Lord loves, okay, you know, we talk about that in verse 6. Okay, so you can highlight the word love there, because the word love right there has to do with there's a form of exchange that's unfolding through this contact, which is holiness. Okay, as Paul said, that you be holy in spirit, soul, and body. Okay, so we can see that there's an activity here that God has assigned for your responsibility for holiness. Say, for whom the Lord loves. Okay, and then we go down here in verse 7. And here he says loves, and then he says the word deals. God deals. God loves. The Lord loves. God deals. And then verse 8, if you be without chastisement, the chastening there, again, has to do with a form of instruction, a washing and instruction. And this is what Moses did with Aaron and also with the people. After he instructed them, after he preached to them, then he sprinkled them with water and blood. And this was their holiness, so that they could engage with God. Okay, now, but if you be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers. So you might want to underline the word partakers, or highlight the word partakers. Now remember, chastening again has to do with a cleansing and restriction, which also has to do with an ordered activity, and that's a commandment. Okay, a commandment is an ordered activity. But if you be without chastisement, whereof all, us all saints, we all share in this one bread and duty, whereof all are partakers. If you're not partaking in this, then are you bastards, he says here in verse 8. Your bastards are outside the house. You're not one that's born of the house. So those that try to intrude within the house of God, okay, are also called thieves. This is what Satan did. Satan intruded into the dimension of Adam and provided a false form of contact for him by false knowledge. And Adam accepting these things was defiled. Okay, and upon defilement, he lost that light. And when he lost that light, he lost the tether. When he lost the tether, he lost his peace. And that's why he hid among the shrubs. When he loses that light, okay, or that understanding and that grace, then he conceals himself and he approaches God. Instead of approaching God in the conditions of this peace, the peace and confidence of faith, he approached God and regarding his present state of mind, which was defiled. Okay, but if you be without chastisement, whereof all are partakers, then you bastards and not sons. You don't possess his likeness any longer. Okay, you're absent of his likeness. Okay, the purpose of the priesthood is to obtain the likeness of God. Okay, we obtain the likeness of God through the priesthood. Just like what God assigned to Jesus, you're a priest forever after you order Melchizedek. Okay, there is a certain likeness that's there, a similarity like a reflection. Of course, we have the same thing after the order of Melchizedek. Okay, we are reflecting him through the priesthood. Okay, and through the priesthood, we gain his perspective, we gain his likeness, and we are as acceptable to him, holy and acceptable unto God. But those which approach him, apart from these tools, okay, the tools which you have to implement this holiness with, that's not his reflection. So they're called a bastard. They bear a different image. They don't bear the image of the house. The likeness of God, they bear a different image of a different house. which of Satan's kingdom. Okay, in verse 9, it says, furthermore, in addition to this, we had fathers of our flesh. Okay, we're bringing up to this point here, the fathers of our flesh, okay, which is that image and that likeness. Okay, now, the fathers of flesh, highlight the word fathers here because we're talking about as thrones and pillars. Okay, we are also thrones and pillars, but we're thrones and pillars of the house of God. We're not thrones and pillars of the dust. So he calls, the Apostle Paul calls them fathers of our flesh. Okay, there are thrones and pillars of the dust is because we had to live by that oath, by the oath of that house. We had to follow that perspective for peace. It's like we have to follow God's perspective for peace. So we had fathers of our flesh which corrected us. By their oath, they were restricting our aspirations by that counsel. Okay, and we respected that position and that experience. Just like we respect the position experience of stewardship. So the fathers of our flesh corrected us, the thrones and the pillars of dust. Because a throne is a father of a house, and that's what we are. We, when Jesus sits us on thrones, okay, we are fathers of a house. We are pillars. A likeness will proceed from us, or powers will proceed from us that bear our likeness, which is tethered to God. Our fathers of our flesh, which corrected us, and we gave them reverence. Okay, should we not much rather be in subjection to father spirits and live? And he says the words, rather be in subjection, which means as subdue the imagination. Okay, the imaginations are cast down or brought into subjection by truth. Okay, the Apostle Paul brought the same thing out in Corinthians about casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalts itself against the knowledge of God. Now, every high thing has to do with that which we place value in, okay, or represents a throne. It's a different throne rather than which God sanctified. God sanctified Christ as our throne, for our tether, for reflection, and also for subjection, of subjection for holiness. Should we not much rather be in subjection to follow our spirits and live? I mean, the God code being expressed with faith becomes perpetual, but the God code expressed by the flesh ends at death. The God code that's expressed with faith is perpetual. The powers which God gives to you at this present time has a perpetual purpose to it. Okay, and it's by these powers that we enter in the presence of God. And it's by these powers that we're sustained. And it's by these powers that we are rewarded. We are rewarded according to these powers, which is the crown. And we see this book of Revelation. Okay, it's not a carnal crown, okay, even though it can take that appearance, but it's a living crown. This crown is made up of the powers of Christ. Okay, and these are the things which he rewards us with, these crowns, these powers. Okay, or the Apostle Paul brings out is concerning the gifts of the Spirit. Okay, gifts of the Spirit are tokens of these powers. And these tokens or these powers assist us in our Christian growth. And these are things which God rewards us with as we endure into the end, as you endure each cycle of growth. Okay, as you endure the chastening. Okay, because again, a truth circumcised the heart, okay, and it changes our perspective of life. Okay, from the perspective of the origin of the soil to a perspective of the origin of the throne. The throne of God. Okay, we are also as thrones. As Jesus said, he that overcomes or grant to sit with me in my throne, even as I also overcame, sat down with my Father in his throne. That we will have access into that light, okay, which is his will, which is his power, because Jesus is the power and the will of God. So he says, should we not much rather be in subjection to the Father's spirits and live? Okay, so we're living by an invisible oath. Okay, and our fathers of our flesh are a physical oath, and we were to direct our perspective of life by that throne, by the throne of flesh. But now we've been born again, so we are directing our activity now by the throne of the Spirit, the Father of spirits, the invisible oath, because he's the invisible oath of life, which we are now expressing by these new tools for our holiness. Okay, so we live by this token. We live by this tether, this token, and this tutorage. Okay, the Father of spirits and live. Now, verse 10, for they verily, the earthly parents, for they verily for a few days, that which is the restriction of time, they, for they verily for a few days chasten us after their own pleasure. Okay, and of course, the chastening has to do with correcting our childish passions. Okay, our childish passions. It was the director of childish passions as something that was productive. Okay, that can build, that could assist, that can contribute to that one house. Okay. Now, the thinking of the world, okay, is in rhythm with itself. And it's independent of God, and because it's independent of God, it's called lawless. And because it refuses the tether of God's throne, it's called righteous. It's righteousness. Okay, those of ignorance continually riot against the throne of God because they want to maintain the right of independent thinking. They're not realizing that their thinking is not independent of the king. It's either one kingdom or another kingdom. Okay, it is not independent. Okay, it's tethered to the house of Satan. Okay, as the Apostle Paul brings out, okay, and regarding those which serve that kingdom, they don't understand what they're serving. Okay, for they verily for a few days chasten after their own pleasure. Okay, for the oath and for equity. But he, being the Spirit, for a profit. Okay, the increase of the house of God. And the increase, the house of God increases with the fruit that you bear. Okay, so the fruit that you bear contributes to the house of God. It beautifies the house of God. Now you can see this also in the Songs of Solomon. Okay, and regarding the shields of the towers. Okay, the beautification of the garden. Okay, the incense, the myrrh. Okay, the frankincense. Okay, these are, this is a descriptive form, okay, of the powers of God within the soul. Okay, which we beautify the house of God by these powers. Okay, the powers of holiness. Okay, and as the scripture says, for thou only are holy. Okay, so for us to approach him, we have to have the same reflection. Okay, we have to reflect him perfectly. But he, for a prophet, that we might be partakers of his holiness. So highlight the word holiness there, and I'll be bringing that up again here in verse 14. So highlight the word holiness there. Okay, so holiness has to do with that, the tokens of power for a priesthood. Okay, the gifts, the callings, the graces of God, prayer, preaching, prophecy, government, truth, and spirit. Okay, these are powers of holiness. Okay, apart from these powers, there is no holiness. Now, if you're trying to achieve holiness apart from these powers, then it's reduced nothing more than trying to correct the passion of man. Okay, and you see this a lot in the psychology, Christian, and particularly Christian psychology. Okay, that holiness is reduced regarding motive. Okay, rather than token of power. Okay, so Satan, okay, which is over the house of Baal, okay, which is also in the false priesthood. We know that there were high priests of Baal, just like there's high priest of the house of God. Okay, Satan has his priests, as God has his priests. Okay, and ministers of unrighteousness, okay, have reduced the powers of God, okay, to that of one's passion. Okay, which the Apostle Paul brings out, okay, in Galatians there. Okay, in Galatians. He talks about these two distinct powers, okay, the fruit of the Spirit and the fruit of iniquity. Okay? The fruit of iniquity is the powers of the false priesthood, okay, and those which are looped, okay, under the moral code, okay, those which are looped in the moral code, okay, under that power are trying to find holiness, okay, through the wrong kingdom. They can't escape the tools that you're using. Okay. So holiness right here in verse 10, again, has to do with the tokens of this power, which is with your priesthood. Okay, so the saints would function, okay, in their sanctified priesthood with these tokens of power, okay, for holiness. Now, you notice that the word holiness is connected to the word chastening. Okay, so your perspective of life changes through each cycle of growth. Okay, and through regeneration, okay, your mind is being changed, okay, enlightened. Okay, your perspective changes. Okay, now no chasing for the present seems to be joyous but grievous because it requires labor and patience and faith. Okay, so no chasing for the present, verse 11. No chasing for the present. Okay, being in this flesh. Okay, because it makes us feel weak and unworthy. Okay, now no chasing for the present seems to be joyous but grievous. Because the grievousness has to do with the restrictions upon the God code. Okay, God is teaching us, okay, and redirecting us, okay, from the God code of the flesh to the God code of the spirit. Okay, because the God according to the flesh works with the imagination and the aspiration. And of course, that's the kingdom which Satan rules over. Okay, the imagination, the aspiration. Okay, but God rules over us by faith. Okay, that's why it says the just shall live by faith. Okay, our perspective of life and our lifestyle, okay, is been assigned different tools. And it's by these tools that we are as holiness to the Lord. So, now no chasing for the present seems to be joyous, but grievous. Okay, nevertheless, afterward, okay, upon the completion of your cycle, okay, it yields, okay, I mean, something is being born within you, as the Apostle John says, okay, whosoever believes that Jesus is the Christ is born of God, and everyone that loves him that begat, loves him also that is begotten of him. And you see that in 1 John chapter 5, verse 1. Okay. The word believe, again, to acknowledge, mold with, and submit to. Okay, so we know that through our engagement with these things, okay, there is something that's being born within us. We're being born again, as Peter brings out. Okay, being born again of the Spirit. Okay, nevertheless, afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness. Okay, so we see another element right here, which is included, which God includes within us as a standard. This is the standard of His oath. Okay, the fruit that you bear is a standard of His oath, and therefore we have peace with God. Okay, because we're not breaking the tethering. Okay, nevertheless, afterwards it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness unto them, those that overcome, unto them which are exercised thereby. Okay, so as we continually utilize these things, the word exercise, which means there is some kind of an effort put forth. Okay, we are expending our faith to see the face of God. Okay, so them are the fruit of righteousness unto them which are exercised thereby. So word exercise, you can hide the word exercise right there. Okay, because you're expending your energy. I mean, you're putting an effort into it. Okay, you're putting an effort into it in order to continue to see the face of God. Okay, and as we continue to do this, you do see the face of the Lord. Okay, so he says here in verse 12, wherefore lift up the hands which hang down. Okay, which means, why would your hands be hanging down? Okay, which if your hands are hanging down, that means you're not laying hold of the horns of the altar. Okay, that means you're not laboring. So the Apostle Paul is encouraging them, okay, to stand up and begin to labor. Okay, so wherefore lift up the hands which hang down, which lay hold on the altar. Okay, so wherefore lift up the hands which hang down and the feeble knees, arise, okay, and function in your priesthood. And make straight paths for your feet, as not to wander the mountains or the hills, okay, but stay in the tabernacle. Okay, so make straight paths for your feet. Okay, because those which worship Baal, okay, worship Baal, okay, with their shrines on every high hill and under every green tree. But we can see here the Apostle Paul saying, make straight paths for your feet, which means you're going right to the altar. I mean, there's no obstacles. Okay, there's no wandering around. Okay, we know what's expected of us and a responsibility. So make straight paths for your feet to the altar, lest that which is lame or even blemished, it be turned all away or disqualified. Because false knowledge disqualifies you from the altar. It's truth that qualifies you to stand at the altar. So make straight paths for your feet, lest that which is lame be turned out of the way, but let it rather be healed. Now we're healed by that washing, the washing of regeneration. So the chastening, okay, the chastening, the scourging, the cleansing, and the purging is for the purpose of healing. Okay, because purging, we're talking about pruning. Okay, just like Jesus brought out there in John 15 verse 2. Okay, and regarding every branch that bears not fruit, that he purges it, or it bears fruit, he purges it, that it may bring forth more fruit. Okay, now if you're not a fruit bearer, okay, then it's removed and cast into the fire. Okay, but now here he says in verse 13, but let it rather be healed. Now verse 14, follow peace with all men. Okay, so highlight the word peace there. Okay, because the peace of God has to do with the existence of this tether. Okay, because this also has to do with your form of discernment. Okay, grace and peace. Okay, grace and peace is also that form of discernment. Okay, which is which is a result of the foundation of truth within you and the anointing, as the apostle John brings that out, okay, in the epistle of John, 1 John. Okay, so this is the peace which the apostle John brings out. Okay, follow peace with all men. Okay, which has to do with this is the witness which is from above. Okay, follow peace with all men in holiness. Okay, without which no man shall see the Lord. So there's the word holiness again. So highlight the word holiness in verse 14. Okay, and draw a line from the word holiness in verse 14 up to the word holiness there in verse 10, if you can. Okay. because again, holiness has to do with that you're separating yourself from the world to God. Okay, by these tools, by these tokens, by these powers, by your priesthood. Okay, so without a priesthood, there is no holiness. Holiness is elusive in the moral code. Okay, holiness is elusive in the moral code because you're always trying to resolve, okay, the motive. Okay, the motive of the heart. And that's when we're in a false religious system, those which partook of the communion, the physical communion, always examine themselves. Okay, and what were they examining? Okay, they're examining their motives. But Paul wasn't talking about that, examining the motives of the moral code. Okay, but those which partake of the physical communion, okay, are constantly trying to weigh the motives of the moral code on a scale, on a scale of their own moral code. Okay, of course, by doing that, with the imagination, they try to bring equity. Okay, but that's a false equity. Okay, and that false equity defiles them. Okay, and then they drink the blood, and they eat that bread, okay, to their own condemnation. Okay, and that's why there's wrath of God throughout the whole world today. Okay, and why God is going to judge, okay, these perspectives, okay, with physical judgments. Okay, God is going to judge these perspectives of these false tokens. Okay, just like he did in the house of Pharaoh. Okay, in the house of Pharaoh, God judged Pharaoh's gods. He judged Pharaoh's philosophy of life. Okay, everything that Pharaoh embraces a token of being superior to other people, races, okay, or other gods, okay, God reduced those things by his judgments, which he's going to do again. He's going to show to the world, the senseless activity, okay, of the imagination and how Satan tethered them, okay, to that senseless activity, to that even to the time of all the way up to the time of their death. Okay. Okay, so follow peace with all men, and the true tokens, which is true holiness. I mean, if there's true holiness, as Paul brings out, there's also false holiness. Okay, the false holiness of the world, okay, is the outward adorning and association with carnal things. Okay, that's false holiness. Okay, the outward adorning. Okay, but it's the inward adorning that where true holiness lies. Okay, which is the tools of this covenant priesthood. Okay, but false holiness has to do with a makeover of the moral code. Okay, it's like a little lipstick on a demon. Okay, that's all you're doing is you're giving a demon a makeover. Okay, but it's still a demon. Okay, which of course that'd be false holiness. Okay, so follow peace with all men, okay, and holiness, just like we see there in chapter 11. Okay, follow holiness with all men, as also Gideon and Barak and Samson, Jephthah, David, and Samuel and the prophets. Okay, when he says follow peace with all men, he's talking about engaging in the stewardship. Okay, with the stewardship, this is what Jesus said to his apostles. And regarding peace I give you, not as the world gives, give I you, but my peace I give to you. Now, who was he talking to? He was talking to his apostles. Okay, that through this stewardship, okay, and by the tokens of this priesthood, okay, those which believe on me through your word, okay, will have peace for discernment. My grace and peace, okay, will be born within them, okay, because it will settle the conscience. Okay, it will settle the conscience and it will bring equity within the perspective, okay, that it's not feigned. Okay, a feigned equity, okay, needs the tokens of this world to try to find equity, to try to bring equity to the imagination. False tokens, okay, which has to do with associations, okay, and amassing gold, silver, precious stones, okay, the things of this world, okay, Those of the world think in terms of equity with carnal things. Okay, but those which are in God's kingdom, we think equity in regarding to things of God, which is our peace. Okay, so so the God of peace will rule those which are of peace, as James said. Okay, and regarding peace. And we see it in James chapter 1. Okay, so follow peace with all men and holiness, with all these stewards. And the word men right there, of course, is in italics, but you can put the word stewards over that. Okay, this is what we're to do. We're to follow peace with all men, or steward, this stewardship and holiness, which is in your priesthood. Okay, and apart from these things, there is no peace, apart which no man shall see the Lord. So we only behold the face of God with these tokens. Okay, without which no man shall see the Lord. See the word see the Lord? Okay, no man would behold the face of God apart from these tokens. Okay, that's why those in a false religious system don't understand the value of stewardship, nor understand the purpose of the priesthood. Okay, they think just by trying to penetrate the knowledge of the Bible, intellectually trying to penetrate the knowledge of the Bible, as Paul said, ever learning, and never able to come to knowledge of the truth. Isn't it interesting? They're ever learning, but never able to come to knowledge of the truth. They don't understand its value, the purpose, or its direction. Okay. So they think salvation itself is in, you could say, their form of correctness. Okay, they're using the knowledge of the Bible, okay, to try to bring equity to their moral code. Okay, and that's and this is what those of that first covenant did. Okay, and those of that first covenant, those that practiced that, like the Pharisees, they were the ones that were the hypocrites. Because they were using the text of the Bible, or the Torah, they're using the text of the Torah to try to bring equity to the imagination about themselves. Okay, but Jesus says, you're of your father the devil. The devil did the same thing. Okay, he tried to resolve conflict, okay, or bring to bring, which is false equity. He brings equity, which is false equity, to his imagination by his association about what he thinks of himself. Okay, just like the Pharisees did. Okay, there's no tether in that. I mean, there's no tether to the throne of God to that. Okay, but the tether of Satan, of course, has to do with the precept in line. Now follow peace with all men and holiness, without which no man shall see the Lord. No one behold the face of God, okay, apart from this tether. Okay, whereas we have our peace, whereas our discernment lies, okay, grace and peace. Okay, now grace, of course, grace and peace is found upon that foundation of truth. Without truth, okay, there is no discernment. Okay, now verse 15. Now looking diligently. Okay, now looking diligently has to do, we're seeking peace and this witness, okay, through the tools, as concerning your prayer life. Okay, if you have a weak prayer life, I guarantee that you're not going to have, the peace of God. And so you're going to utilize things outside the tabernacle to try to find your peace. Okay, and by doing this, okay, you are actually exposing yourself to Satan's kingdom. Because Satan is a roaring lion, walks about. He's outside. Okay, and he's looking for the weak link. Okay, in order to exploit that weak link. Okay. And if you don't turn to the Lord and cry out to him and use the tools of this covenant, okay, then you become food, okay, for the kingdom of Satan, food for the wolf. So in verse 15, now looking diligently, okay, we're seeking peace. Okay, with these tools. Okay, because the peace is the witness which is from above. Okay, looking diligently, lest any man fail the grace of God. Okay, or grows dim. That which the word fail, which means to grow dim. Okay, your faith begins to become weakened. Okay, and of course, when it weakens, then look what else happens. The root of bitterness, the fruit of envy begins to sprout up. Okay, to compete. You begin to compete with the moral code. Okay, rather than to contribute and loving thy neighbor. In the house of Bel, okay, you notice that there is competition, okay, in the house of Bel. But in the house of God, okay, there isn't competition. There's contribution. Okay, we contribute by loving thy neighbor, not competing thy neighbor against thy neighbor. Okay, but you can't love thy neighbor unless you love God first. You have to love God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and you love your neighbor as yourself. Okay. So here in verse 15 again, looking diligently, lest any man fail the grace of God. Okay, list any root of bitterness. So you can highlight the word root of bitterness there, or fruit of envy. Okay, springing up, that which blossoms to complete. Springing up, which means the blossom to complete, it begins to trouble you. Okay, it brings you into a state of confusion. Okay, it troubles you. Okay, because you're trying to find place value. Okay, with this token which God has not sanctified. Okay, you're trying to place it within. You can't place bitterness and envy and strife. Okay, as a token in your priesthood. Okay, they won't fit there. Okay, these weren't the sanctified tools. Okay, these are the fruits of iniquity. Okay, those of Satan's house, it utilizes these things to try to find equity, okay, and they become very aggressive in the matter of its usage, to try to find equity, just like the Pharisees did. They became more aggressive. Okay, every time Jesus presented truth to them, it awakened their conscience to righteousness. Okay, but instead of yielding their will and accepting the grace of God and yielding their will to the grace of God for faith, okay, they tried to cover up that discrepancy with good works and fair words. Okay, and so they feigned themselves to be just men. Okay, and they became more aggressive against Jesus. His living presence was a threat against them, just like it is today. Okay, The scriptures aren't threatening. It's the stewardship that's threatening. And that's what Jesus said. If they persecuted me, they're going to persecute you. It doesn't say if they're going to persecute the Bible. It says if they persecute me. The stewardship is what they don't like, because the stewardship, okay, brings to their attention this challenge. Okay, the challenge for conformity and to build a house of God, to love thy neighbor. So looking diligently, lest any man fail the grace of God. Okay, that grace will grow weak within you. Okay, and it will be replaced with these things, the fruits of iniquity. Lest any root of bitterness spring up trouble you, and thereby many be defiled. So I like the word defiled there. Okay. Now, if you're defiled, it's also going to rob the soul of peace. Okay, because this spirit of bitterness becomes a barrier to that grace. This like the barrier of envy becomes a barrier to grace. Hate becomes a barrier to grace. Okay, these tokens of Satan's kingdom is a barrier to grace. The only way to overcome those things, if God grants you repentance, okay, He has to give you the grace, okay, in order for you to escape, okay, the tethering of Satan's kingdom. Okay, that's why the just shall live by faith. So let's go to verse 16 here. Right, and we see an example of this. Paul uses Esau as an example, a bad example, okay, for an individual that resists grace. Now, lest there be any fornicator or profane person as Esau. So you might want to highlight the word Esau there, because now the Apostle Paul is giving this contrast. We see contrast throughout the Bible, okay, concerning light and darkness, okay, height and depth. Okay, wheat and tares. Okay, Cain and Abel. Yeah, we see the same thing with Ishmael, okay, and Isaac. Okay, or Esau and Jacob. Okay, the house of Bel, the house of God. Okay, God allows the contrariness to exist for the purpose of discernment and to strengthen your will. Okay. So here he uses Esau, okay, as an example of contrariness. Okay, so lest there be any fornicator. Now, a fornicator here he's talking about is concerning philosophical fornication, okay, which is false doctrine. Philosophical fornication does not contribute to truth nor build a house of God. Okay, it detracts from its value. Okay, it devalues the truth of God. Okay, and you can see this in a lot of forums. Okay, with they call them Christian forums. But you go in a Christian forum, you can see there's a lot of philosophical contamination there. Okay. and each individual in there is competing. Okay, you can see the competition isn't building. None of them there are building the house of God, but they're competing against the house of God. Okay, lest there be any fornicator or profane person. Now, of course, profane has to do with a false piety. Esau would put on a display of false piety in the presence of Isaac. Okay. Okay, Esau would make references to God, the God of his fathers, Abraham, or God of his father Isaac. Okay, but his heart was only toward achieving the goals of his aspirations. We see this today in many pulpits. Okay, in the pulpits today, many pastors talk about Jesus, Jesus' love for people, and Jesus dying on the cross. Okay, but their tethering is to a different kingdom. Okay, that's a profane person, false piety. Okay, a fleshly display of holiness. Okay, and also they begin to set standards of the moral code. Okay, you notice that the standards of the moral code is a false holiness. Okay, and when you read many Christian, you want to call it religious periodicals and books, okay, they're constantly trying to resolve the conflict in their conscience with these false tokens, and it will never happen, because the conscience is only pure by faith. Okay, not with the tokens of the moral code. But the very thing that they're using is contaminating them. Okay, as offering a sacrifice to God that has blemish in it. Okay, when you offer a sacrifice to God that has a blemish, okay, it doesn't matter how much emotional display you have at the altar. Okay, you are condemned by God. And this is what Esau did. Okay, Esau tried to resolve the conflict of what just transpired between him and his brother. Okay, and Esau sought the counsel of many of his contemporaries, okay, his friends, okay, those which are close to him. Those which, being close to him, by the way, okay, were the ones that were overthrowing his faith, because they were continually flattering Esau, okay, concerning his earthly skills. Esau thought that he would be able to achieve the promises that Abraham and his father Isaac received by his own initiatives. Okay, by the tokens of his own ministry, and that will never happen. Okay, because Esau's mindset was the same thing as Judas Iscariot's mindset. Judas Iscariot's mindset was that he was going to try to achieve the millennial reign of Christ, okay, through his guile. Okay, he was trying to put Jesus into position to claim himself to be a king. Okay, as Esau also was trying to put himself, he was, okay, rivaling a position, and he looked at Jacob as a threat. Okay, to that rival, Jacob was a rival to him. Okay, but Jacob was a man of faith, and Esau was a man of aspiration. Okay, and many people enter into the ministry of aspiration. They're not called of God. They just enter the ministry of the aspiration, and they use their intellectual skills, as Esau used the bow and the arrow, okay, to try to achieve those goals. Okay, Esau is not called of God to do those things. Okay, Esau uses earthly skills to try to achieve a heavenly promise. Okay, and many in the pulpit today are doing the same thing. They're promising eternal salvation by the tokens of this world, as tithing, water baptism, physical communion, Sabbath day observation, okay, and other tools of the moral code, okay, which only work confusion in their mind. They can't understand it. Okay, why is it that they have contributed so much, okay, to the religious system, and yet they suffer so much in its lack? Okay, there's no earthly paradise in earthly things. Okay. Hey, if you want peace, the peace is in God's kingdom, not in a man's kingdom. Okay, the peace of God is with the tokens of God. The peace of this world is with the tokens of this world. Okay, and that's what Jesus said. Jesus made the same statement. There's two kinds of peace. Okay, my peace I give to you, not as the world gives. What peace does the world give? Okay, the peace of the world has to do with the aggressive nature to accomplish the goals of the aspirations. And many people feel peace when they accomplish the goals of the aspiration, okay, or in pursuit of it. Okay, as long as there's a goal to achieve, they feel that there's a peace within themselves, but that's a false peace. Okay. As the prophet Ezekiel said, there is no peace, saith the Lord, to the wicked. Okay, now lest there be any fornicators, so make sure I have a note there on that. That's philosophical. Okay, philosophical fornication, idolatry, a follower of Baal. Okay, all Bell's tokens are physical tokens. All Jesus' tokens are spiritual tokens. Jesus made that statement pretty clear when he says, they that worship God must worship him in spirit and truth. He didn't say they that worship must worship him with all their gold, their silver, and their cattle, okay, okay, and everything that they have. Jesus didn't say that, okay, when he said to Peter, Peter, do you love me more than these? Okay, Peter, do you love me more than, okay, the tokens of the flesh? Okay, the tokens of... Okay, the tokens of those things which you're accustomed to. Do you love me more than these? And then he said, feed my sheep. How much you feed my sheep with my tokens? Okay, not with your tokens, but with my tokens. Okay, so highlight the word profane person there. Now, for one morsel of meat, that is to, he felt that he could gain his objective, okay, and strength by carnal things. Okay, this is what Esau thought. For one morsel of meat, okay, he thought he could gain his objective. Okay, okay, and also at the same time sold his birthright. Okay, Jacob being the younger. Okay, but we know what the scripture says, that the elder should serve the younger. Okay, and we can see that God again, okay, was affirming that statement. Okay, or that promise that he made, that the elder should serve the younger, as also the Lord himself would serve us. Okay, remember the Lord said that to his apostles, okay, that he would gird himself and to serve them. Well, that's what he's going to do in the third covenant. particularly, he's going to service us with these powers. All right, well, let's go on to verse 17. For you know how that afterward, when he, Esau, would have inherited the blessing, okay, that witness, now he was rejected. He was rejected because he found no peace. All right, he was denied peace. Okay, he was denied peace, and he looked everywhere to try to find that peace there. For he found no place of repentance, though he sought it carefully with tears. You see that verse 17 there? For he found no place of repentance. No idol, no temple, okay, no temple gave him peace, nor could reverse the conflict, okay, which he was feeling in his heart. Okay, Esau felt conflict in his heart. Okay, and finally he came right to this one point, that if he would kill Jacob, okay, that would remove the whole thing. That would just settle everything. That's what the Pharisees arrived at. Why don't we just kill Jesus and that will resolve everything? Okay, then everything will be back to normal. Okay, we can follow, we can continually follow our tradition, and we can include some of Jesus' teaching within our traditions. And that's what the false religious system has done today. The false religious system, we can see, is portrayed as the Hydra in Revelation chapter 13. Okay, we see in the house of God, okay, in chapter 7 of Revelation, okay, that there was one head, okay, Jesus Christ. But in the false religious system, there's many heads, okay, as the Hydra. Okay, and Esau was worshiping the Hydra, okay, the many heads, the many philosophies of this world. Okay, but we worship one head. That's why it's called the Godhead, not the Godheads. Okay, if it was the Godheads, that'd be many truths. But we know there's only one truth in God's kingdom. Okay, and we know that truth was manifested in a human form. Okay, as concerning the person, what he said and what he did, what he has done, and the product of that. So, verse 17: For we know him that is, we know how. Verse 17 again: For we know how that afterward, when he would have inherited a blessing, he was rejected. He could not find peace. He was untethered from the throne of God. For he found no place of repentance that could reverse this. Though he sought it carefully with tears. Okay, he tried to resolve this conflict with many prayers, that the things which he felt. He became very religious at the time of conflict, and people do that. Okay, that's just part of the carnal nature of man. Okay, people become religious, very religious. When there's the contrary circumstances are overwhelming. Okay, but there's no faith there. Okay, they're just using God to try to resolve the conflict. They're not interested in loving God. They're interested in resolving the conflict. And that's why people tithe and why people go to church. They want God to resolve conflict. They're using God, and they're using God and these tokens of tithing, okay, for protection. They're paying God for protection. Okay, but God says, but your protection is in your priesthood. Okay, your protection isn't in gold and silver. Okay, your soul cannot be redeemed with gold and silver. This is what Peter brought out. Okay, okay, and regarding the things of the first covenant. Okay, you weren't redeemed by these physical things. You were redeemed by the blood of the Lamb. Okay, this new priesthood. See, though I saw it carefully with tears. Okay, we know that from our own experience. We remember people beating the altar and crying out loud. Okay, they would cover the altar with their tears. Now, why were they crying so much? Because they're trying to find resolve the inner conflict. Okay, they're trying to set equity in the moral center. Okay, but that's what faith is for. Okay, equity is when faith. Okay, it's when your priesthood is in with the tools of the covenant. Okay, if you want to find peace with God, you enter in a covenant with God. Okay, you enter in covenant with God by taking responsibility of your priesthood. Okay, using these tokens. Those things which he has assigned for us to use. Look at verse 18 here. We get ready to close. As you prepare your sacrifices. For you at this present time, for you now at this present time, are not come in an amount that might be touched. Now you notice the words he used right here? You see the word touched? Okay, physical. Okay. God did not assign Jesus' covenant with carnal things. Okay, for you're not come in amount that might be touched. You are not come. Okay, you will not see the face of the Lord with carnal things. Because Moses already preached that to us when he covered his face. You cannot see God with carnal things. So Moses covered his face to preach to us, okay, that it's only by the Spirit that we behold him. Okay, because when Moses went in before the presence of God, then he removed the veil. But when he went out of the presence of God and looked at the flesh, the veil was on his face, so that the people could not steadfastly look and see him. Okay, so that's the same thing today. Those which try to please God with carnal things, these are the children of wrath. But those that please God with the things of the Spirit, they worship in that Spirit and truth. Okay, we see his face openly. Now we behold the face of the Lord. Okay, that we don't measure things, okay, on a scale of the moral code or the frailty of man. We measure things on a scale of truth, okay, and by the power of God. When King Saul tried to measure the value of David, okay, on the scales of his own moral code, he found treachery in David. Okay, but when Saul beheld, okay, an activity of God when David killed Goliath. Saul rejoiced in that. He saw the power of God. Okay, and when he saw the power of God, okay, then at that point there was a relationship there. Okay, there was a communion there. Okay, but Saul, because he did not have a heart towards God. Okay, continually, we can see what happened at the very end. Okay, that he pursued David as one that was, as if David was a traitor. And David, we know that David was never a traitor. Okay, and regarding the house of Saul, that's just what Saul thought. Okay, and that's by the defiled conscience. Okay, now verse 18 again. So we see the word touched there, carnal things. For you're not come in amount that might be touched, and that burned with fire, nor in a blackness, darkness, tempest. Okay, which shows the hostility. Okay, the display of these things was to show the hostility that God has towards carnal things, but also to show that that the invisible kingdom, okay, is visibly manifesting itself. Okay, about one more minute here. Okay, so the sound of the trumpet and the voice of words. There is a physical manifestation of an invisible kingdom. Okay, which of course exists outside, okay, the carnal eye, okay, that which is the carnal eye, it exists without, okay, but those which are functioning in their faith, okay, and also functioning within a covenant, okay, we can see these things. Okay, we can see these things. Okay, so the sound of the trumpet, the voice of words. Okay, the, which is interesting too about the voice of words. He's talking about, okay, it was a non-human sound. Okay, something that was very different than he ever heard before. Okay, and it was so strange to the hearing, okay, that they could not endure that which was revealed to them. So the sound of the trumpet and the voice of words. Now, why did he say this? Because he says that the knowledge of my kingdom, which is invisible, is strange on the ear, the carnal ear, the carnal-minded. Okay, the knowledge of my kingdom is strange to the carnal mind. The voice of words, okay, is to them that are carnal-minded as non-human sounds. Okay, when they read the same things that we read, they don't. That those which are the carnal-minded cannot understand it. They cannot penetrate the knowledge. Okay, because it's the voice of words. Okay, but when we read it by the assistance of God's grace, okay, then there's distinction and direction to it. Okay, and we'll have to pick up here next week. Around verse 19 here. So I have to